You're going to hear a lot of music, a lot of music, ladies and gentlemen, because we've got an absolutely full studio. One of my old, about a month ago, I'm walking out of the Prudential Building. I see an old friend with this little cute little boy, and I go, "Hey, Carla, what's new?" And you tell me, "Well, Rick, we just got back from this world tour."
Well, it was a cute little girl.
Oh, it was? Okay. Well,
we were going ice skating, remember?
Yeah. It was cold.
But, you said, "Hey, David Fink just got off of this really cool thing. I just saw it on Facebook, and it was amazing." And I said, "Yeah, we were with him."
It was a world tour. David Fink is also here, and some wonderful musicians, one of whom just has flown in. Just got in from Tahiti, of all places, and it's not. But the great thing is, the thing I absolutely adore about you, Larissa, right now, is she just got back from Tahiti and she's fascinated with the views of this place. It's like it must be some kind of horrible culture shock. What was this tour, Carla Bazile?
Well, it was a peace tour with a bunch of artists who are curious about travel.
Yeah.
And about connecting with people around the globe. And just a kind of an experiment, actually, in some ways, you know, to try to, can we go around the planet, basically, in 40 days and connect with people and play our music, but also maybe make some long-lasting connections.
You see, music, I've often thought, David, get in on this, whatever you want, that music is a language of its in and of itself.
It is, and on the tour, there are a number of times where people didn't share a common verbal language, but would share dance steps and share different sounds, different instruments, and there's a great beauty in that. It was a great way to communicate.
David Fink runs and founded the Acorn Theater, the greatest theater in the country, in Three Oaks, Michigan. How did you get involved? I know you became the world's greatest road manager on this world tour. How did you get involved, David?
Well, I've worked with all these performers a number of times through the years through the Acorn. So I have, you know, relationships, long-standing relationships. And Carlo invited me, and I believe in saying yes to opportunities when possible. So
what intrigued you about the tour?
Well, the message.
You're not a musician. You're not a part of the tour in a performance level.
No.
But what intrigued you about this?
Well, the mission really intrigued me. I love the group. I love what they do. And the concept of people of different cultures collaborating musically and creating sounds that are combinations of instruments from different cultures and creating something that sounds like it has always been together. And there are times on the tour where people joined us in different countries and the same song would sound very different depending who the collaborators were. And the intercultural collaboration really intrigues me and I think it's beautiful.
Sarah, introduce yourself to this vast radio audience, would you please?
Yes, I will. Good evening, everyone, and happy Easter.
That's right, I forgot that.
We're so happy to be here in Rick Hogan's studio with a wonderful view.
It is really something. I'll tell you, it is something.
So I'm Saraswati Ranganathan. I founded the Surabhi Ensemble about a decade ago. Veena artist.
And you've been, and David carried the Veena most of the time, right?
Yes.
This is what he's claiming, right? He's claiming this. When did you start the ensemble?
About a decade ago, like 2012, around that time.
And we have met before. You've been on a various incarnation of this show, and you and Carlo have collaborated.
Yeah, we've been collaborating for more than 10, 12 years now.
And Ronnie Malley is also in here. You're going to hear them play later in the show. Explain to me, Ronnie, Carlo, Sarah, David, what was the seed of that? Were you sitting around one day and said, "Hey, let's go ask for some grants and hit the road"?
I'll start because this is Ronnie. I had received word that the DCAES, the Department of Cultural Affairs,
yeah, sure,
and Special Events, was offering this new grant, which was kind of like the rehashed CAP grant they used to offer, but they call it the IAP grant, which is the Independent Artist Performers Grant. And but they only allowed you to do one. And there was one year that I wanted to do two.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was for another tour with another group. And the other was, Carlo and I and Sara had been talking about recording an album. I have a recording studio as well. And I said, well, I'm only allowed to write one of these. I said, so I'll help both these people write them. I said, Carlo, you're going to this info session. You're going to sit down and get all the information you need. And we're going to write this grant to record the album.
Wow.
And so we did. He went in and we got together, wrote this grant, and we recorded the album at my studio. I think that was like the seed.
Sure.
Part of it was also we thought, let's put together like a nice CD release party of sorts. And without mentioning names of other venues, it's funny how when you live in a town like Chicago, you have the respect that you get as an artist. But it's funny because they look at you as a local that you're not going to get that same respect you do somewhere else.
Yeah, isn't that funny? It's a kind of provincialism that exists here that I'm glad you bring this up because it's always kind of astonished me. They don't get it. Or they claim you, well, you're our own. This isn't going to work someplace else. Do you feel that way, Carla?
No.
The second part, you mean?
Yeah, right. No, it does work someplace else. And
sure.
It turns out for us, it works better in some ways. But you're up against that. And then after the album came out, we were like, well, let's do something with the album, you know. And so we used that as the foundation to do this tour and to apply for more grant money. And that worked out. And we were able to go to Vietnam, go to Spain, go to Portugal, go to Senegal, all in 40 days with the help of Arvina Valet, with the help of Larissa over here documenting everything. And
how does one go about selecting the places? I know you both of your bands have connections, and you both played around the world. And do you sit there and sit down at dinner one night and say, you know, Senegal might be fun. We know somebody in Spain. Well, we know somebody here.
Exactly.
That's
exactly it. And also, you know, all this wonderful, crazy technology that we have, which is great and crazy at the same time. We know this from everything that's going on in the world right now. So I try to take the best of it. And was able to use a few applications to talk directly to Vietnam, to talk directly to Spain, to talk directly to Portugal and Senegal on a daily basis.
Oh.
So basically, I was in touch with our connections over there, people that I've met before and collaborated with, musicians. And we just started piecing this thing together. And it seemed crazy, but yet... With all of this technology, even when we got on the ground, I was able to use my data on my phone to connect with, you know, in Vietnam, in Hanoi. Do we have the right address? It's in Vietnamese. I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, this sounds fabulous.
So the whole thing was like us on motorbikes, you know, and David. With the Vina on a motorbike, you know, trying to get to the next gig that we had six gigs in 3 days over there.
Wow.
So it was kind of a magical mystery tour, but something really happened while we were there, and we can talk more about that. I'm sure Sara has her take, and Ronnie has her take, his take. But basically, I asked everybody last week or 2 weeks. I'm starting to think of new ideas for a new project to describe what they were feeling on the road.
Sure,
and I got some great responses from everybody in the group. How this made them feel, connecting with immigrants, connecting with refugees, connecting with other artists. I mean, we did it all on this tour. We even went to a circus. We'll talk more about that.
I can't wait. We got to take a little break, but these fine people will be here all the way for the whole hour until 10 o'clock, and you're going to hear some music, and you're going to hear what this trip was like, because it certainly sounds life-altering. Chicago Blues, done with David Fink's road managing skills. Now, I want you each, Carla, sort of set up the tour, how it came to be and what it was like, and I'm sure each one of you has dozens of seminal experiences of the road. Sara, why don't you talk first about how you founded your ensemble.
Sure. So from my personal experiences, I wanted to get to the... I want to address one of the root causes of addressing conflicts at a community level and as well as a societal level. So what I was trying to do was get people from different genres together on stage. So mm-hmm. this would be like a motivating factor to attract audience from a cross-cultural background. So get sort of people from different backgrounds together. And I also feel like we're very lucky to be artists in that we get to share our creative energy with a large section of people at once instead of just one-on-one. So why not utilize that precious moment to convey something impactful, something positive? So I feel like if I'm able to create, if we as a group are able to create awareness about these differences that we have, so there is more awareness from the audience perspective of what's different. And then, so over a period of time, let's say this is sort of a non-acceptance at ground level, and over a period of time, as you continue to do the raising awareness, hopefully, you know, goes up to at least a shade of neutral, and hopefully long term it goes to a state
of
acceptance.
State of acceptance.
So if we are able to use our precious sharing time with the audience to convey something that's positive, impactful, so hopefully there is less hate and less.
Well, you probably saw dozens, if not hundreds, of examples of that when you were on this tour.
Yeah, actually, there is a subtle paradigm shift in how people view something that's different from
them. Yeah, absolutely.
So, towards the better.
Ronnie, give me an example.
Well, you know, we went on this tour not necessarily as what some might view as the standard tour, like you're going to be playing the Budokan, and then all
right,
of a sudden you're
library.
Going to this, you know, huge venue, and you're on the road and throwing television sets out the hotel window or anything like that. the majority of what we did, I think, was we had an idea, and this is, Carlo's modest about this, but really a large part of the connections we had were from Carlo's friends.
Right.
And coming full circle, though, most of those friends he met in Chicago. So that, the huge Chicago connection, really.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when it came to putting the tour together, we're like, my friend is here, but can we do an educational thing here? And there's this other place, there's this refugee organization, maybe we can work with them. Then there's, and in between, we did a lecture at the University of Cordoba, which was probably one of the highlights for me in, of going back to the where my instrument kind of made it, right? And but for me, the one thing that really stood out was our last venture into Portugal. And we were there with a great friend of Carlo, who became all of our friends, Catarina. And she works with a conservatory there, as well as another organization. And there was a refugee organization that we went. We actually worked with two refugee organizations there. One
That's
was in
great.
Odemira, Portugal, and the other was in Lisbon, Portugal. And when we got to Lisbon, this organization was housing refugees, a majority of them from Syria. And they came to the show that we kind of had for them, really. And they brought some of the food, and some of the families came. And while we're playing, one gentleman came up to me. He's like, you know, he was there with his daughter, son, wife, and himself. And he said, you know, I play a little bit of oud as well, my instrument. I said, here, play, you know, let's hear you play. And he started. He starts singing. Then his daughter starts singing. Then his wife starts singing.
Oh,
then his son. And before long, we've got a circle of him and some of the friends there. Because Sarah had an idea. She's like, you know, let's dedicate a medley. Can you sing some Syrian songs to them during the set? And so I did. And that really just kicked things off. It's amazing how a song just moved the entire mood, you know?
Well, one of the things, it sounds like one of the great aspects of this tour was a certain spontaneity of it, too. True, Carla?
It's true, and I think that it's a function of our ages, that we've been in all these crazy circumstances before, and so I think all of us were pretty calm, wouldn't you say, David?
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of that spontaneity, David's got a story that happened at a circus in Malaga. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, one of our gigs was in a circus tent, and it was crazy, and the music that we performed fit well with some of the circus acts.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Great and fun. And at the end of the show, it was really literally in a tent. The power went out, but we have amps that have a battery backup. So the music was still playing, but there was no light. So the audience, everyone took out their cell phones and turned on the flashlight. And we finished the show to flashlight, cell phone flashlight light. And it was just so beautiful and collaborative and cooperative. We just shared that moment, and I don't think anyone that was there will forget that.
Sarah, what about for you? I know it's like choosing your favorite child from a million. That was the circus one?
That was one of the moments.
Malaga's a great town. I lived in Malaga for a while, near Malaga, many, many years ago when I was very, 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 very young, like meaning 18, and fell in love with that country.
Yeah.
We got to take a commercial break, get some news, and then we'll carry on and hear some music and talk about what is going to happen with this movie that's being shot. This is what I'm curious about.
You got to talk to Larissa.
I know, but Larissa documented the entire adventure, yes?
Yes, yeah, she did.
She's the one.
Yeah.
We'll talk about our friend Rick Bayless, who joined us, too, after the break.
Why not? Why not? I am so glad to meet you and you and to see you and you and you. Okay, Carla Bissell, what is this? What are we listening to? Huh? Well, you can say that. You looked at me. Carla just looked at me and said, well, I didn't write that. That has nothing to do with me. All I did was ask, what is this? I have four of the nicest people in here who have been sort of touring the world, spreading their music, but also spreading, I think, peace and understanding, too. I don't want to make too much of this. But when you're in Hanoi, when you're in Spain, when you're in Senegal, do you find that people curious about not just the music and about you as individuals, but about Chicago at all?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, but about the U.S. in general.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more about U.S., and politics. People around the world are a lot of people are very in tune to U.S. politics. And so you could have a lot of higher level political discussions outside the United States than you're used to having even at home. I found that interesting.
Yes, based on the local perspective, too. Like, I had an interesting conversation with our friends in Hanoi. For them, anybody who's tough on China, they're really happy about, because China dominates that region so much.
Sure, sure.
So, like, you know, when we were getting into conversations about how we might feel about the current regime or whatever, they didn't have the same take on it, because they just want somebody who's going to be tough on their bully neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Isn't
so it was kind of interesting, because you're like, man, your perspective is.
The enemy of my enemy.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You also said, Rick Bayless, the famous restaurateur of Chicago, met you and gave you like a restaurant tour of Hanoi. That must have been.
Well, we kind of gave him a restaurant
tour. Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah. What does he know about Hanoi?
Anyway, Rick and Deanne are amazing, and they support the arts. And
No kidding.
They have supported our work in the past, and Rick said he was going to be over there in Vietnam. And I said, well, come to Hanoi, because I have some people down on the street who will take you around. And literally, that's what we did. We took him on a street tour of the food. And Larissa made a great little documentary of that whole thing. We should be able to post that sometime. But it was pretty awesome. And so Rick was there. He had a great time. And it was great to have them. They came to, two or three of our performances
while they
were there. They really supported what we were doing, and they got it. Like, you know, they understood when we were at a school. We did this pagoda in the middle of a lake, and they were out there. Rick shot a video of that and posted it. So we've had a really nice relationship with them, and they have totally supported our work and the work of other artists.
One of the things, I know you guys aren't the Rolling Stones, and you're not throwing, or the Who, and not throwing things out of hotel windows. But there can be something really exhausting about the road. And it seems to me, I mean, you're back now, you're energized. Were there moments when you said, David, get me another hot towel. I can't move. Stuff like that. I mean, it seems as if you went from place to place, and if you were tired in one place or from the traveling, there was immediately something to energize you in the new place. Am I...
Yeah, there were some moments, and I know Sarah had a moment in Africa, and Ronnie had a moment in Cordoba, and I had a couple of moments, too. All of us, I think, were like, well, we're going to put our best self forward, but every once in a while, it was just like, hey, man, got to let off a little steam, would you say?
I would say so.
But in a good way. I mean, it wasn't like anybody was, nothing got way out of hand. I just think that sometimes you get a little cranky when you're jet-lagged because you've been in five different time zones, you know. And
when you're eating different foods and you're performing, and it's exhausting in a way, physically, emotionally, and creatively.
I got really sick at one point and got better.
Who helped you, though? You're the road manager.
Got better. You know?
You're the glue.
Not a choice.
You're the glue that held this whole thing together.
Went to sleep at like 7 o'clock, slept
him.
Through.
We were his cheerleaders. Yeah.
Did you get stronger carrying the Vina?
Oh, yeah. Can't you tell?
I
should take my shirt off. You'll see.
This must have. I mean, how many people were with you at I know people came in and out.
We were rolling like 14 deep.
Wow.
Like I had my wife and kids with my two kids, 5 and 3 years old. And my wife does tour logistics and tour management. She kind of helped with some of the tour preparation as well. Carlo was there with his wife and child.
Daughter. It's a daughter he has. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Which I'll never forget.
Who were good friends with my kids. Oh. So it was like this really wonderful family trip. And then, you know, when Larissa came along too, like Larissa and I had known each other through the Old Town School of Folk Music way back when, through other mutual friends, through David. And we had 3 or 4 of our other musicians. Some people joined us. Our main thing was that we wanted to also engage artists who were there, wherever we went.
Yeah,
that was a huge premise.
Sure.
I mean, the tour was called Global Peace Tour. So, I mean, I know it's tongue-in-cheek to some degree.
I get it.
But we really meant with sincerity what we wanted to go do. We walked into these situations, met some fabulous people who opened their hearts, opened their doors. I mean, they made things happen so fast, things beyond that what we actually prepared for. But I think, all in all, we learned as much from them as they did from us.
Yeah, I mean,
you were invited to be part of that National Theater.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
In
the
Vietnam.
National Song, Dance, and Theater.
Yes, I. So we were able to play with instruments that we would have never seen before, all those indigenous instruments and music. And they invited us to perform with them as a concluding piece. That was so amazing. It was a wonderful experience, which is exactly was one of our intent to involve the indigenous artists.
I have the feeling, too, and you guys are going to explain to me what you're going to play in the last little segment of the show, if you want to play, because I like talking to you, too. I like hearing your music, but I also like talking to you. This trip has obviously inspired you to pursue, if not similar places, certainly similar jaunts. Yeah.
Yeah. In Portugal, I just got a message yesterday from our friend. They'd like to bring us back for some festival shows and to do more work with the Indian immigrant children who were there. They specifically talked to wanted to bring Sarah back and the whole group next year to do some festivals there. So that's already just like as a result of the groundwork. But really what we were trying to do too, and I think we should point this, is just to be ambassadors of Chicago.
Sure.
And I think that was the thing. And so there's a lot of animosity, there's a lot of attention going on right now politically, and I think we wanted to present, it was like my way of responding to that in a positive way. To say, what can we do? I don't agree with what's going on entirely, but how do I not just do a protest or whatever? How do I do something positive?
But it's also putting things in perspective for people who are getting bits and pieces. You know how the news travels. They're getting bits and pieces of information, and all of a sudden, in come you guys smiling and sharing your music and sharing yourselves. It gives perspective to the nonsense.
That became our mantra, I think. When we were in Vietnam, we had said it. It was... people would see this array of diversity on the stage.
Yeah.
You know, a guy from Indiana and a woman from India, right? And, you know, two dudes from Chicago, one guy who's Middle Eastern, another who's Jewish, another who's what? I mean, it was just a myriad of us on the stage. And then throw in the mix all the people we were collaborating with,
sure,
as well.
The people there, yeah.
And one of the
yeah.
things we said on stage, we said, you know, what you see here, this is America.
Yeah.
Not what you see on TV.
That's a great message. That's a great message. That implies peace. We got to take a short commercial break, and then do you want to play or should we talk some more? You don't have to play. If you want to, fine. If David Fink has to carry something someplace, that's fine. That's fine too. But I really like, I mean, this is a great conversation. Yeah, you want to keep talking? We can keep talking.
Can
you brought all your instruments. Anybody wants, look, this is it's like a nightclub here, except I can't smoke in here. Anybody who wants to get up and play can get up and play, but we'll be back in a couple minutes. Okay, Carla Bazile, what are we going to hear?
I don't know. I think we're just going to mess around with this Raga Blues from our CD, and you'll get to hear the Veena and the Oud especially first by themselves, because I think it would be cool for the audience to hear that, and then we'll rock it out a little bit. How's that?
Sounds perfect to me. David Fink, what are you going to do? What the hell are
I'm
you going to
sit
do?
Here. I'm just going to watch and enjoy. This was my life for a month.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was our life for a month.
Huh?
That was our life for a month.
Fun.
All over the world, three
David,
continents.
This literally, in many ways, for you, must have changed your life, too. That was just beautiful playing you three. I'm virtually knocked off this chair.
Yeah, I mean, you travel around the world and you find there's no such thing as a stranger, just people you haven't figured your connection to yet. And, you know, make friends, make connections.
But for you also to watch the interplay between the musicians and the wide variety of audiences.
Right, and collaborators, and how the same song musicians will sound different in different countries with different people joining. We had a song where in Portugal, a woman put Portuguese lyrics to the song, and then in Africa, a singer put African lyrics to the same song, and it just sounded so different. Mm. And it sounded like it was always like that, and that's how it was meant to be.
Did you record while you were on the road?
We did. And I think I'll have to get together with Larissa and go over some of the material that we have. We probably have, I know you did a lot, right? Yeah, we should. I'd love to get Larissa in on this for a second, but...
You didn't record like that.
There's a mic, Marie.
Yeah, Larissa.
Larissa just
It was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful trip. I was taking video and photographs. We had a couple dancers as well, in addition to the musicians. And in some places, other dancers joined in. We had a flamenco dancer in Hanoi join us, and the African dancers in Senegal. And one of the great moments, she was so into dancing, she tore off her wig.
That was the best part.
Yeah, that was.
She was just herself.
So it was very visual as well as the music.
Yeah. And I guess technology makes it relatively a lot easier to record live as opposed to having, you know, carrying tons of equipment. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. I also want to just take a quick moment to say that that was Larissa Rolley, R-O-L-L-E-Y, who was speaking, who's very modest as well. Everybody on the tour was so modest.
Obviously.
I mean, really, she's got...
you just went on a tour that changed hundreds, if not thousands, of lives, and you're like, yeah, it was fun.
It was all right.
Yeah, it was
one family,
okay.
You know, they got out of poverty.
Had a good meal.
I want to also acknowledge the other folks that were actually with us for most of the ride were Greg Nergard, who was playing bass with us, Bob Garrett, who was performing on percussion with us, Kinra Rivora, who's dancing Indian classical dance with us, Leticia Aravena, who is also doing classical flamenco and Spanish dance. Who else did I?
Well, Masamba Diop.
Masamba Diop, of course, who is
Black
Oscar Panther
winner.
Movie Oscar winner. Right, Black Panther soundtrack. And by the way, we'll be playing with Masamba in Michigan and going to the Acorn Theater, thanks to David, doing a lecture in August. And so you could check out my website, carlobasiliguitar.com, sarabiensemble.com.
Acornlive.org. Acornlive.org.
So we should mention that, but Masamba will be
in. I'll put all this on the website with the links to this. You guys are amazing. You're doing, it's not God's work, it's man's work. Woman's work.
And I want to thank Logan Foundation for the Arts. I was able to write a grant with our Surabhi mission, and they supported us with $10,000.
Well, it's not enough. I mean, I think all arts grants should be, you know, massive grants.
Mind you also,
but
like,
everything helps.
We wrote all of these grants before we knew we would get them. Yeah. Like, we were going to do the tour no matter what.
Yeah. Wow.
And the way that many of them work is, you do it, hopefully we'll give you the money. You'll be reimbursed for everything that you've spent money on.
Oh, is that really the way it sometimes
works?
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, what Larissa's been filming and just, you know, this radio, the next time you go apply for a grant, it'd just be good to show them, like, give them this.
Just listen to Rip Hogan's
show.
Give
them what you're doing. Make a movie. We'll have a real documentary film out there. David, will you go again?
I sure would. And I got to say, thank you for being such a supporter of the arts.
Oh,
I think artists in Chicago have no better friend than Rick Hogan.
That's true.
So, but I have no money. So let me win the lottery. I'm dead serious. Let me win one of those big mega games. You will never see a bigger arts contributor. It'd be so simple. I go, what do you play? Where do you want to go? Here. Here's a check.
You don't have to fill out all the forms. Or
no forms. There are no forms.
It's like,
we will meet for a cocktail. I will have a checkbook. I'll meet people for a cocktail. You want to open a theater in where? Three Oaks? Never heard
it's
of
crazy.
It.
It's what's crazy. It's a crazy idea.
What's your favorite band? Oh, it's something. Here's a check. That would be my wish.
Awesome.
But go to the two websites. They'll be on the website, and you can get. Carla, how many CDs do you have now?
Oh, geez. I did. I think five with Las Guitarras. We have one with Sarabi. I have a couple on my own. Yeah, we're and Ronnie's producing a lot. By the way, you want to mention?
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead. Tell people.
Oh, God.
About your tour.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yes.
Not yet.
No. Oh, not yet. Oh,
okay.
Okay. You might see Ronnie all over the country.
Really? No, don't jinx it, Carlo. Yeah. Don't jinx it.
Carlo. But I will mention my company.
Good.
Sure.
Because we did produce the CD, Intercultural Music Production. But that's the thing. We each have our own company. Sara has Ensemble of Ragas. Carlo has Mikkel Rack and
Las Guitarras,
And Las Guitarras de España. And we said, you know, let's combine Artists Unite. You know, the one thing that we can take away from this, and I'll say Carlo was a really great inspiration to a lot of this last year especially, is that if you want things to happen, and I almost cursed on the air, but
yeah, that's okay.
If you want Isht to happen, then you got to make it happen.
Yeah.
You have to just get up and do it, and that's how things will happen.
Well, that's how the radio time. We ran into each other on the street with his beautiful little daughter.
Thank you.
And so what are you doing? I said, we got to do something on the radio, because this is how I learn. I can't... pal around 24 hours a day with David Fink.
Well, you can.
Well, I could. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. I was just so intrigued by this, and you've done a remarkable job of, detailing it to people. I bet there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there going, man, I'd really like to go on a trip with those guys. I'd really like to go on a trip with those people.
It was fun. David's a fun travel companion. We would get up early in the morning in Vietnam and dance with all those women at 6 in the morning.
I saw David's Facebook page. Ronnie, David, Sara, Larissa, Carlo, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a couple minutes.
It's you I like, not the things you wear, not the way you do your hair, but it's you I like, the way you are right now, the way down deep inside.
I so like that song. I've been listening to a fantastic CD that caught me so by surprise. The voice you're hearing there is that of Kerry Jonsrud, who is sitting here across from me, who's going to be playing at a club called Hey Noni in Arlington Heights on Wednesday, and Piano Forte, a great venue. Not that Hey Noni's not. I've never been there, so I can't comment on it. Hi. That CD, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood-based, is a revelation to me. How did that, before we get into you as a performer and where you're from, I think you're from Iowa,
mm-hmm,
right?
I am, yeah.
So, Bonnie Kolak, two great singers from Iowa. How did this come to be? You and a collaborator decided, for some reason, that the music of Fred Rogers, I'm too old to have been a Fred Rogers guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I know one song of Fred Rogers. The fact that he was a prolific composer caught me completely off guard. What's the seed of the CD?
Well, it was a surprise to me, too, to find out that he wrote so much music. And how it came about is Kevin Bales, who's my collaborator on the album, we were talking one day about the different children's television programs that we'd watch growing up, and how the music on those programs was there was a lot of jazz and classical music on those programs. And we talked about how on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, there was a live jazz trio on set performing the music. And Kevin was like, well, you know, Fred wrote that music, right? And I was like, no.
You know, you're like, how would I know?
You didn't. Yeah. He's saying on the program, but I didn't know he actually wrote the music for it. And so we just kind of got this idea of, well, let's see what he wrote. Let's kind of dive into his catalog.
Were you kind of stunned? Because I dove into the catalog after getting your CD. I, too, dove in the catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, frankly, Kerry, I was flabbergasted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was as well. I mean, the majority of his music is, of course, children-based.
Sure.
You know, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
But what we wanted to do was try and find those gems in there that could relate to adults as well, or to the generation that grew up watching Fred.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things about his music and the show, as I know the show only as a sort of former TV critic viewing it from this seat, is the messages are, you know, are timeless mm-hmm. and frankly ageless.
Right. Yeah, and that's the beauty of this music. It's, you know, even listening to it as an adult, you hear those messages. I mean, probably pick up on them more than you do. Than I did when I was a child, anyway.
You know? Now, did you, I mean, as a child, mm-hmm. and let me ask you now, as a professional musician, mm-hmm. How affected were you or imbued were you by the music? Because I would think not much mm-hmm. as a kid.
Right. Like, I liked the music, but that's not really what I was paying attention to. You know, I was more into like the trolley, into the puppets and, you know, the fun activities that he was doing on the program. But Kevin, he's a little bit older, and that sound kind of caught his ear. And so what he would do is he would listen to the last, I don't know, 30 seconds of the program and realized that each time it was different, not realizing that that was jazz. He just thought, oh, this is really interesting that the ending or the whatever they play is not the same every time.
So were you a musically inclined young child?
Yeah, I mean, music was big in our family for sure. And,
how so?
My mom was a singer and my grandmother. Yeah.
Professional singers.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Oh, interesting.
And so, yeah. And so
with bands?
Well, she kind of did her own thing. She did big band music, which kind of hit me to the whole jazz kind of genre. But and my siblings all play music as well. I didn't really catch on to that in the program for some reason. I knew I liked it. I just didn't really know what I was listening to.
When did you start taking music seriously as opposed to, well, it's something my mom does.
I know.
Did you study music in grammar school, for instance?
Well, a little.
Much as anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I would write my own little tunes, you know, whatever. I actually went to probably college is when I was really starting to get serious about it. I didn't study music in college, actually.
Where'd you go to college?
University of Iowa.
What did you study?
I studied health promotion.
What is that?
That's
where you scream at people, yeah. Take your vitamins. Yes. Take your vitamins.
Yes, exactly. Health education. Eat well. Exercise. That's, yeah.
No. Why health promotion?
Well, medicine is also big in my family, too. And so I was always interested in...
Your father a doctor?
He is a pharmacist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I was always interested in it and in wellness and that kind of thing. So I was involved in music in college. I did like choirs and stuff like that. But you know, I tried to do the smart thing. I use my quotes here, and get a degree in something that thought at the time
that might pay money.
Yeah, exactly.
that might provide a living wage. Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of funny now. I'm doing music as a living as opposed to the other.
Did you getting out of college? Did you work in the healthcare field at all?
I did a little bit. I did for about the first, about the first 4 years here in Chicago.
And what did you start during those 4 years mm-hmm. as a young did you start going to clubs?
I did, yeah.
And is that part of the reason that your career path might have changed? Where did you go and who did you hear?
I started going to the Zebra Lounge, believe it or not.
Oh, I love the
right,
Zebra Lounge.
Yeah. That was my first introduction into...
Zebra Lounge is in a building just north of Division on State Street, Canterbury Court building.
Yes.
Where the Zebra Lounge yes. has long been.
Yes.
Why did you start going to the Zebra Lounge?
Well, my oldest brother, he was visiting one day and he's like, hey, let's just check this place. He's really into music too. So he's like, oh, let's just go check out this piano bar and see what it's all about. And so we went, and as you know, it's a really small place.
It's a really small place.
It's like 10 people can fit inside. And we were listening to the piano player at the time is Gary Philip.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just kind of singing along to whatever he was playing. And he just kind of looked over at me and was like, you're a singer, aren't you? And I was like, how do you know that? And so we started talking on his break. And he said, next time you come in, I'm going to have you sit in. We're going to do you know, some tunes, whatever. So that kind of started the whole ball rolling.
That's a great story. He empowered you.
Yeah. And he was very supportive and was a mentor of mine for a number of years.
Well, that's one thing we'll talk about. I want to hear some of your music, too. This is a very, you could not have picked, I don't think, a better town in which to rediscover your musical career, because it's a very nurturing town.
Yes, it is.
We got to take a short break, and then we'll come back, and you can pick a tune to hear, and we'll talk more about Fred Rogers and you.
All right.
Want to see Tom Skilling live in concert? Well, come out to WGN-TV's White Sox Weather Day, May 14th. Then watch the Sox play the Indians. Tickets available at whitesox.com/WGN. Welcome back. I'm with Carrie Johnsrud until about 10:45. We were talking about her rediscovering her, what has become her life's work at the Zebra Lounge. There are very few people who can say that, no matter what their life's work is, that they rediscovered at the Zebra Lounge. And then you just, I mean, it was the encouragement of this piano player who, and you thought, well, can I really like this?
Yeah. And then he introduced me to other musicians and, you know, you just start playing with other people and, you know, one thing after another happens. And it was really there where it started.
And you found, as I have often remarked and found, this is a very nurturing town, especially for young performers.
Oh, for sure.
You don't have the weird jealousy that's got to exist in Manhattan and got to exist in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, come play with me. Sit in.
Yeah.
Do this. Here's a song that you might like. Did you start taking vocal lessons, or did you get really serious about it and quit the healthcare business?
I was taking vocal lessons when I first moved here. And then when I started going out to clubs and open mics and jam sessions, you know, I'd get home at 2-3 in the morning and then have to go to a job at 7 o'clock is not exactly
conducive.
So I knew that I wanted to pursue the music after that.
What'd your mom think?
She was all for it. Yeah. I mean, my whole family was really. They're really supportive. So.
And how did you find those first few years? Satisfying or tough? I mean, it can be, you know, their venues shrink. And there are very few venues in this. Zebra Lounge is still here. But, you know, Davenport's has been around for a while. And the Showcase has been around for a while. And Andy's, where you're going to be playing every Tuesday in June.
Yeah, from now until June.
Oh, from now until
Yeah,
June.
We're playing there currently, actually.
Until the every end of June. Tuesday.
Every Tuesday from 5 to 8:30.
Who are you playing with?
Right now I have Tom Vaitsis on piano. The bass player has been Christian Dillingham or Joe Paul Castro. And Ben Gray is on drums.
Nice.
So
you're making a living at this. You're also teaching,
right? I do, yes. Mm-hmm.
So let's get to Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
So you and your collaborator decide... You're going to dip into the vast catalog of Fred Rogers' music and see if, I mean, you couldn't have at first said, oh, I'm sure we'll be able to do a nice thing here. You wanted to see if the material was there, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we knew of a couple tunes, of course, that a lot of people are familiar with, like, you know, It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, that kind of thing. But as we were going through all the different tunes, we realized that there was a good crop of songs that we could work with. And like I said, we wanted to have an album that people of our generation could listen to and identify.
Yeah.
But then also play it for their children, or, you know, kind of a multi-generational album.
And so Kevin Bales took it upon himself to do the arrangements of all this.
Yeah, he did most of them, yeah.
Was it difficult at all to get the rights?
No, not really, believe it or not. It's, you know, it falls under just the regular licensing. So, and it's been really wonderful because I have been in contact with people from the Fred Rogers Center and Fred Rogers Company, and they're really supportive of the project. So, and in fact, we've actually heard from a couple members from the cast. They've been in touch with us, and that was just surreal and just wonderful that they give it the green light as well.
You know, in many ways, it's kind of a treasure that you found here that mm-hmm. no one, it's a part of his, and I do think he was a brilliantly talented guy,
mm-hmm.
but part of his oeuvre that no one paid much attention to.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there were, I mean, there have been other albums that have been recorded of some of his music, but we wanted, like I said, to do something that could appeal to a lot of people. So
let's listen to one while we end this half hour. What would you like Dan Long, the great engineer, to play?
Let's do Find a Star.
Find a Star. Favorite vocalist, Carrie Johnsrud, that was who you were hearing on this. She and Kevin Bales have collaborated on what is really a remarkable CD that most of you, because I was not a big, maybe my mother didn't let me watch him, I don't know, but Beyond the Neighborhood, the Music of Fred Rogers is a really stunning CD that, as Carrie said, it is these tunes of which he wrote dozens, if not hundreds, kind of reimagined mm-hmm. for an adult audience, but with that same wonderful kind of message that would go to adults mm-hmm. and go to kids. You must be awfully proud of this, young lady.
You know what? I am very pleased with how it all ended up. You know, this is definitely a project that we put our heart and soul into because we feel so strongly about the material. You know, we feel strongly about the message and you know, hopefully, you know, prolonging his legacy. And, you know, he was such a fixture for, you know, in so many people's lives and meant a lot to so many and influenced a lot of people. So, you know, we didn't take it lightly. And we
recently you sort of became part of this, like, you know, Fred Rogers fever that struck. I mean,
yeah,
it was Fred Rogers everything.
Right.
A dramatic movie, a documentary that should have won the Academy Award, frankly. Mm-hmm. And that was a great, great film. We'll talk more with Carrie after the news, so please stay tuned. And I promise to play you another song from the CD. Welcome back. I have a few minutes more with Carrie Johns Rudy, a young woman from Iowa who came here and her healthcare career was derailed, as many things have been derailed, by a place called the Zebra Lounge, which is one of the great, great saloons in the history of Chicago. And I'm glad it's still kind of a secret, too.
Yes. Okay.
You ever go back?
I haven't really been inside lately. I've walked by a few times. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm not going to tell you where it is now. She has been playing all over town. She's currently playing at Andy's through the month of June on Tuesday nights. Mm-hmm. That's so funny, but Chris Green, the great jazz man who was in here, he started having a regular Monday thing, and now he's moved to a regular Saturday thing at Andy's, and he couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
And he couldn't be more deserving, too.
I agree.
She and collaborated with Kevin Bales, who did much of the arranging, on a CD that didn't so much reimagine the songs of Fred Rogers as it has re-enlivened them. Mm. You know what does that make sense?
Yeah,
to
that's
you?
A great way to put it. Yeah, that's a good description.
Yeah,
they
were meaningful, I think, to children listening to the show, as much on the show was, but now, just in the way that they've been arranged and the way that you deliver them vocally, it reignites them for an adult kind of audience. And Carrie has a website, too. You should go to the website. You have a nice website, frankly.
Oh, thank you.
Very nice website. It is Carrie, K-E-R-I, johnsrud.com. She's going to be playing at Hey Noni in Arlington Heights on Wednesday. You don't know much about that club. What I know about it, it looks nice.
Right.
It's about time they got some kind of jazz club out
there.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, there was a time there where there was a few jazz clubs out there, like Pete Miller's.
But mostly restaurants.
But this is an actual, like, real jazz club or music venue.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I should say. And I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it. So
same here. Mm-hmm. And then on Thursday night at Piano Forte, which is one of the, talk about that space, that's also kind of a secret, because you know what, because they don't serve booze there,
right?
That's probably it's a serious listening room, but talk about it. I am charmed by it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. It's a small, intimate room. It seats maybe about 100 people at most, and that concert is actually just going to be a duo gig with me and Kevin. So,
oh, how nice.
Yeah, so it'll be very intimate, and you'll get to really hopefully just hear the music as when we started putting it together. So I'm really excited about that show on Thursday, and of course Hey Noni as well. That's going to be with the full quartet. So
what do you do with the full quartet when you're not singing Mr. Rogers compositions? Talk to me for a second, Carrie, if you would, about your appreciation of him as a serious composer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you listen to his music, really take a listen to it, I mean, he kind of falls in line with those of, like, Cole Porter and, like, the Gershwins and Richard Rogers. And we really were discovering that when we were playing around with his music and playing his chords and his changes, and it seems so simple, and it is, but yet it's very sophisticated, and he was just a brilliant composer that didn't get enough credit for that.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. In going through his catalog, do you think there might be another CD?
Maybe. I mean, we're performing additional songs that we didn't get a chance to record.
And you discovered some songs. Tell me I'm wrong. That some songs of his that never were on that show.
That's true. Yeah, we found some songs that were on his previous children's programs. He had a couple before The Neighborhood, and so we were able to locate some of those songs that didn't make it to The Neighborhood show, but were on his other shows. And he also wrote, I think, around 13 operettas and a few operas, and so we pulled a couple songs. I know, he's so just so talented.
You know, when most people have a secret life, it's not that not that charming and good.
Yeah.
But the secret life of Fred Rogers is this musical explosion. Yeah. When you're not singing Fred Rogers, what do you sing?
I actually do a lot of my own compositions. So I write my own music, and you know, of course, I'll dive into the American Songbook. Yeah, of course, a little bit. So. But yeah, this project has definitely kind of taken a life of its own. So
yeah, it's gotten incredible response too. I hope there's another one. Carrie Johnson,
oh,
it's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much.
We share an affinity for the Zebra Lounge, which I don't share with many people. Usually they go, "Wow, what's that?"
Yeah.
Near the zoo. I go to Carrie Johns Rood, KerriJohnsRood.com. Go see her at Hey Noni in Arlington Heights on Wednesday and Piano Forte in Chicago, South Michigan Avenue on Thursday, and see her every Tuesday through June at Andy's. Pleasure to get to know you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break and then we'll talk about high school. Having lived through it last year around this time, this is a very tough time for parents and children in Chicago, as usually eighth graders are tested to within an inch of their lives, physically, emotionally, and intellectually, in an attempt to get into Chicago high schools, some of which are selective enrollment, and you have to take a test for those, some of which are parochial, and you have to take a test for those, some of which are private and cost a arm and a leg, and you have to take a test for those. I am so fond of Josephina McHenry of the Sacred Heart, in part because Patty Toomey is the president of that place. But Josephina, hi Patty.
Hi Rick.
How are you? How are you?
Good. I'm listening to you.
I was just going to ramble on for like 20 minutes about how difficult a time this is for parents. It really is, Patty. I went through it with Fiona, who was
Fiona last year, right?
Yeah, and it is, to my mind,
it's grueling.
It's a miserable time, I think, for kids, because the pressure to get in to an acceptable school is intense. You know, and you look at this recent, you know, the bribe your way into college thing going on.
Right.
And you think some of the same thing might be going on. What do you think of it? Because you're at the heart of this whole thing.
Well, yes. And as a parent, I know both, you know, we both have ninth graders now, so we've kind of lived through it, but there's scars, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think also being a head of a high school, actually, I'm privileged to be heading up the longest standing girls' school. We're part of the Sacred Heart Network, which is, you know, such a support not only in Chicago but around the world. And
sure.
You're absolutely right. It's such for students and for families to try to find the right fit for each particular student.
And I'm going to say, Patty, that Josephina, it was of the Sacred Josephina Academy, was a little under the radar for me. It remains a bit under the radar. I think there are people who, because there's this striving for, well, I have to send my child to St. Ignatius, and I have to send my child to Latin, and I have to send my child this. Do you feel that way? I know you've increased the profile of the school a bit, but don't you think it's still a wonderful, almost kind of secret out there?
We are a secret,
yeah.
But we don't need to be a secret.
I agree.
And, you know, I think that's the situation that, you know, innovation over the last 130 years has kept the Joe, we affectionately call it the Joe, alive and vibrant. And, you know, just recently, I think you know that we have had an international baccalaureate program for about 200 girls. But now we've just launched what we're calling the Real World Learning Program, which is great what you're learning in the classroom, but how do you develop your network? How do you get an internship? How do you know how to prepare your resume? So those are activities and also skills that a student needs to know.
Now, is it all girls?
Yes.
How many?
We're just under 200, which for us, we like, because with the International Baccalaureate Program, it really gives attention to each student.
See, that's what I found. I visited the school a number of times. I haven't seen the new field outside, so I want to talk about that, too, that the Cubs built for you. But I found there's a wonderful kind of intimacy to the place where I knew the class sizes were not huge, and facilities were you could stretch out there. Do you know what I mean? Intellectually and physically, and in a lot of other ways, it's a charming space you have there. Not that school should be charming, but that's part of it too, I think.
Well, it is, and personally, I don't think that there's anything wrong with being charming, and I think that definitely lends itself to the community that we have. You know, we don't have 2,000 students. We have around 200, and it really creates that community. And what I hear the students say, it's almost like a sisterhood. You know, and they're going to get your back no matter what, no matter what you're studying or what you're doing after school.
Yep. Tell me about that field. When did they with was it the Cubs? I'll never forget. I said, "Holy cow! You have the nicest athletic field I've seen this side of Columbia University or something."
Well, we are so fortunate because, first of all, we're sponsored by Sacred Heart, but we also have our founding partner is the Sisters of Christian Charity. So they're kind enough to let us use that field, and in turn, the Cubs Charities program, their Diamond Project, as well as Big Shoulders and some other donors, said, you need a new wonderful green space to play softball, soccer, have field days. So it's outstanding. And we were able to have this inauguration with many different Chicago supporters, I would say. It was last June. So now we're finally getting to use it it's spring now.
Well, then don't be fooled. Don't be fooled, Patty Toomey. Don't be fooled. The other thing that and I my experience, I don't have a kid at the Joe, but I have met a number of students at the Joe over the last few years, thanks to you, Patty, and Dot Coyle. One of the other highlights is that the tuition at St. Josephinum is, given the state of financial affairs in the city of Chicago, especially the private schools, is remarkably reasonable. Can you mention what it is? And I hate to get commerce into this whole thing, but that has to be a huge consideration for parents, too.
Well, it is a huge... I mean, it's wonderful if you get accepted to a particular school, but if you can't afford it, then it's really not an option for you.
Yeah.
And so what we feel is we have a really strong program, but then price, so to speak, the tuition is $9,000. Now, in saying that, we are blessed with raising a lot of money from a lot of supporters. So the average family pays about $2,500, and that's because their student is amazing and gets financial aid and scholarships.
Wow, that is one of the great bargains I've ever heard of. And as you know, some private schools in this town are in the they're what people used to pay to go to college, $40,000 a year.
Yes.
Now, remind people how you got to St. Josephinum, because I love that story.
Well, it was interesting listening to your last guest because she was in healthcare and then went into music. And so I was in healthcare just prior to this, but I also got to work at some pretty amazing places like the Field Museum, the Department of Cultural Affairs, yeah. the School of the Art Institute. So I have a pretty Chicago, quote-unquote, background. But it was time. It was time to go back into education, and I was so enamored with meeting the students and the faculty yeah. that I felt like it wasn't just me who was, you know, going to make this the best place in all of Chicago, but it was really the gift of being able to be with them. And yep. It's interesting because I know when you visited, like, my office is all glass, so I get to see the students and we get to be together, which is pretty terrific.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you've been there for how long now?
A couple years now.
Yeah, and it's been, I think, unbelievably rewarding. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it's been unbelievably rewarding for you, hasn't it?
You know, it has, and I can't think of a day that I regret being there. It's always a challenge trying to make sure that we have enough money so that we can have all the students who want to come to the Joe be able to come to the Joe.
Sure.
But, you know, that's the worst part of my job is trying to make sure that I have enough money so that I can award scholarships to these fantastic women all over Chicago.
See, if you have a fantastic woman now who is going through the strum and drang of trying to get into high school and stay here, I would recommend that you go to this school site, Josephinum, josephinum.org, by which I'm assuming, Patty, they can make arrangements to tour the school and see what it's like and maybe even be lucky enough to meet you.
Well, I would love to meet them, and we do. We have an open house if somebody would like to come. It's April 27th.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Good
it's
timing.
Right around the corner.
Good
yes,
timing.
It's very good timing. But if you are busy that weekend, we can always tour you. It's not too late to take that Catholic school test that you were talking about.
Right, right.
You know, we'd love to have any interested, as you say, fantastic young woman in Chicago come and visit us.
Yeah, because I tell you something, the young women I've met there are fantastic kids, and they were smart, and they were personable, and they were, you know, if the Kogan child hadn't placed into one of those selective enrollment places, I'd be knocking on your door too, Patty. I think you've done wonderful things up there, and I think anybody out there who is, and boy, you're so right, we both share that knowledge of what a tough time this can be for parents and kids. Boy, it's go ahead.
It is. And, you know, clearly it's been a year, and, you know, now they're in ninth grade, and so, you know, we're still talking about it, and we're not the only ones. And I think, you know, that's probably for my next time with you, right, is what's going on in Chicago and education overall. But at least, you know, we have the parental perspective, and all we could do is what's best for our own kids and best for the kids of Chicago.
And I also, I think you're running an oasis for kids of Chicago. Patty, it's always a great pleasure for me to talk to you. Patty Toomey.
Rick, thank you so much.
Of the Josephinum Academy of the Sacred Heart, but the people who know it and love it call it the Joe. I hope you fill up, and I hope I can get up there. I want to see that field used, finally. I want to see that fantastic athletic field.
Come up.
I will.
Come up.
I know. It's not far. It's not far.
Nope.
Patty, thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Rick. You have a great night. Take
you
care.
You too. Thanks, dear. Okay. Thanks. She's great, and that place is great. I mean, it's tough what kids have to go through to get into school. Shouldn't be. Dan Long and I are going to end this show with another selection from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, reimagined for Dan. Whatever song you must have seen Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or you're too young.
No, absolutely.
Okay, well, pick a song. Pick a song. They have reimagined the work of Fred Rogers into, you know, hip jazz tunes, man. It's a brilliant, brilliant idea. What are we hearing?
This is called The Weekend Song.
Perfect.
Even though it's the end of the weekend.
To end your weekend. Carl Amari's coming up, so your weekend is not quite over yet. Dan Long's been engineering. Ben Anderson's been producing. And you've been listening. Now listen now.
Be back when the week is new, and I'll bring more ideas for you, and you'll have things you'll want to do. Thinking of people makes them see me. The friends who know you love you cheerfully. I do too.
That is, Dan Long picked the shortest song so you could get the full measure. Her name is Carrie Johnsrud, and she's got a great voice. It's amazing. I haven't bumped into her in the last 20 years she's been singing in this town. Thank you for listening. Thanks for, you know, ending your Easter with me and Carl Amari, who's coming up. You had in here earlier those amazing musicians from the Sarabi Ensemble and Carlos Bazil of Spanish guitar, Carlo Bazil, Ronnie Malley, Sarah, Larissa, Acorn Theater owner David Fink, talking about their recent tour of Vietnam, Spain, Portugal, and Senegal, which just sounds like just a remarkable, remarkable trip. Carlo has been on this show a number of times, and he's one of those, you know, he's kind of an award-winning classical guitarist whose mission is not to win awards, but to spread the power of music. And Sarah, whose last name I will not try to pronounce because I'll mess it up, is also incredibly talented. And the Acorn Theater, the David Fink, who started and founded the Acorn Theater, went on this journey just to experience it. He does not sing. He does not play an instrument. He basically was like a roadie for these guys and carried the instruments around. He runs a place called the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan, which is roughly an hour from Chicago. Go to acornlive.org to see what shows are coming up. And Three Oaks itself is a charming, charming town. I would recommend going to Nelson's, which I've always called the kind of billy goat of Three Oaks. And then go to Carrie Johnsrud. That's KerrieJohnsrud.com. And also, talking to Patty Toomey of St. Josephinum Academy. She's the president of the school, and it's a charming little school that is, at this time when everybody's is kind of under the radar. It's kind of a secret in the Chicago parochial school society. It's not, you know, it ain't St. Ignatius, let's put it that way. St. Ignatius is a very good school, but Josephinum is an all-girls school. JOSEPHINUM.org. As I said, Carl Amari is coming up. As I said, Dan Long is the greatest engineer in the world. As I've said before, Ben Anderson is the greatest producer in the world. You people are smart, and I hope I've entertained and enlightened you. So, see you next week.